time for the lunch break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
So we have a number of things to get here today. Michael Pappas is in with me. We will hopefully talk with Justin Ferguson in a little while. I'll be curious to see if we get an opportunity to do that, because I'm sure Justin's busy. It is, as you all already know, Iron Bowl week. Gus Malzahn takes the podium at 11:15. So we will have updates, news, notes, all that for you. You can follow along at J Ferguson AU. He'll have you covered there. Michael, I hope you're well. On the show today, we have Charlie Potter joining us. We will talk to him. He covers the Alabama Crimson Tide, a little peek behind enemy lines. And then at noon, David Housel, former athletic director, will join us by phone, and we will talk with him about the upcoming Iron Bowl and some Iron Bowls of old. Before we do that, though, as we work our way through the show, I want to take an opportunity to talk about someone who's been in our lives since the 80s. He's taken a little bit of a break. Many of you know him as the Papa John's man.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days. Livy currently and Mark Shapiro should be in jail. He has no pizza experience. He's never been in the pizza category. I would just say, stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's not straight?
Stay tuned.
Can a giggle from someone who runs a business like that mean good things for anyone, including himself, Michael?
Yeah, no. Used to run a business?
Is he healthy?
40 pizzas in 30 days?
That's a number.
I'm not going to lie to you. I felt like I did that before, but 40, that's an unprecedented amount of pizza.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days. Livy currently and Mark Shapiro should be in jail.
Wow. I mean, strong words from the Papa John's man, who noted Louisville. Mm-hmm. Supporter. Things have taken a turn for him, though, here. And I want to revisit this conversation that he's had. Have you followed this much? Do you have any sort of intel on what's happening here?
So I'm guessing he's referring to when he was ousted from Papa John's. When he, when that story came out, it was super weird. It was that he said a racial slur, and then
on a conference call, I think he was citing someone else. What was the situation there?
My understanding of it was that he was saying that he's not Colonel Sanders. He won't say the N-word, and said the N-word on the conference call, basically being like, I'm not going to do that. Don't worry. And then I think the company blackmailed him, or the PR firm he was on the phone with, like, blackmailed Papa John's with that, and then the board ousted him, and so
it is his opinion that that the pizza is simply going downhill at Papa John's. So we will revisit this topic, because he does not look his best. He is not the Papa John of old that we came to love so much at one point, and now every time you see him in the headlines, it is a little bit sad. But you know what? I'm assuming, for whatever it's worth, and we seem to measure a lot in this country around this, dude's probably still doing fine in the bank account. So good on him. We'll talk to Charlie Potter in about 10 minutes. We will talk with him and get his thoughts on the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Auburn Tigers matchup. But a pleasant surprise right now, former Hall of Famer here on the lunch break, sliding in. Many of you know him as an Auburn baseball player. Great sweater. I wish you could all see it right now. It looks very comfortable. Yes, Jeremy Johnson, the baseball player, gracing us with his presence. My friend, hello, how are you? You texted me earlier in the week I'm glad you got a chance to slide through. How's life?
Man, life is good. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be back on the plains. You know, it's Thanksgiving break, so I had to make a trip down to the plains, see all my friends, see all the old people. And
the old people?
Yeah, well, not the old people,
I know,
but
yeah.
The non-current people that are keeping up with me.
Right. I hear you. So you're from, or at least you've lived in a number of places, but you got family in Atlanta? Are you just down for the Iron Bowl? What's going on?
Well, I actually came down to basically visit my girlfriend. I haven't seen her in like 5 months.
So, okay. Good reason.
She's a gymnast at Auburn. You know, go Auburn Gymnastics. And so I just basically had to make sure we're still dating because I hadn't seen her in so long. And so, you know,
how could you not be with the cologne you're wearing right now?
Again,
you've always been a dapper gentleman. How's life up in Cincy?
It's cold.
I bet
it's cold. But you know, our football team, that's the hot topic up there in Cincinnati. The best team in Cincinnati. You know, the Bengals aren't really the best football team up there right now, but University of Cincinnati Bearcats, we got a big game on Saturday against Memphis. Already clenched the AAC East, and now we're going for the title game. So
going on little runs, the old baseball team had themselves a run through the conference tourney, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. We started off super cold. You know, we came to Auburn, and I racked up 3 strikeouts that Friday night against Tanner Byrne. So I was happy I was able to contribute to history here at Auburn. You know, being a part of the most strikeouts in a game, tying the record for most strikeouts in a game here at Auburn. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Tanner actually tied Casey's record for most strikeouts in a game, and I had 3 of those strikeouts. So
thanks. I'm sure he appreciated
it. I'm always giving back to Auburn, you know, regardless of what.
Even when you're not here anymore.
For sure. So yeah, we started off 1-9. We got picked to finish second to last in our conference, and we ended up finishing in a 3-way tie for second place. So that was kind of a big ordeal. And then basically the whole, I don't know if you heard the term, ball don't lie. That whole tournament was ball don't lie, because everyone's like, oh, they shouldn't be. The reason why we actually got the second seed is because I think it was Tulane had played one less game than us. So I think one of their games got rained out and they couldn't make it up. And so that's how we got named second place. And so there was a lot of animosity, but we ended up sweeping our way through the finals and into the Corvallis Regional, and taking down the defending national champions on their home turf was actually pretty cool, and it was a cool atmosphere. I'd never really been to Oregon State, and you know, we're ready to do it again.
It was a big surprise at the time. We were cheering you on from here, and if you're not familiar, many of you are, Jeremy Johnson joining us, former Auburn baseball player with the Cincinnati Bearcats now, and a Hall of Famer here at ESPN 106.7.
What was it like coming back and playing the Auburn team when you knew so many of the guys?
Yeah, no, so I was really confident actually coming back in here. I was like, you know, I played these guys for 3-4 years. I know the field. I know the atmosphere. I know what it's going to be like. So I was pretty confident. And then we come in Friday night, and I think I was batting second that game, and our leadoff hitter struck out. And then I was like, all right, you know, that's whatever. I've seen Tanner plenty of times. I remember, like, the first 2 pitches he threw to me, I, like, couldn't see him. Like, I swung through them. I thought that I was, like, right on them, and I just couldn't hit them. And then so that was, I guess, the narrative for the rest of the night. And so everyone was like, oh, Auburn's so good. And I was like, guys, we could beat them. And we ended up getting swept anyway. But, no, it was awesome coming back here. And, you know, they presented my regional ring before the game, and I thought that was awesome. I still have a great relationship with the guys. I still have a great relationship with the coaches. I texted Coach Thompson when they went to the World Series and said, you know, congratulations, and that's awesome, and that's huge for the program. So
a few recently, just a few days ago, Eric Weddle, you know, he's, I guess, with the Rams now, and he had been with the Ravens, and I'm sure this happens a fair amount, but he said essentially he would not help the Rams with any like strategy. You know, he wasn't gonna divulge whatever it was he learned about the Ravens. Did you take the same line, or were you like, yeah, I appreciate it, but hey, I'm trying to win a game here?
Yeah, no, there's always a running joke on my team saying that, dude, you're Bearcat now, all right, you go to Cincinnati, because I always bring up Auburn, and you know, coming to Auburn, they breed you to love Auburn. from the moment you get on campus. And so everyone's like, oh, you're at Cincinnati now, you're a Bearcat. I'm like, yes, but like I'm also an Auburn alumni. It's not like I just transferred, you know, I got a degree from
right.
here. And so there's always a joke how, like they said, I tried to sabotage the game because I had three strikeouts and I played so bad. Or I didn't really play bad, but I just couldn't hit them. And they're like, you know, we know you wanted Auburn to win. So, but that wasn't the case at all. I mean,
they think that you were just doing your due diligence by striking out and giving Auburn that helping hand. Although, to your credit, didn't a number of other people also struggle?
So it's absolutely.
Like, maybe this isn't just a Jeremy thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the thing is because I started off the year pretty hot. I was hitting like 460 through the first two weekends, and I hit a bomb opening weekend, and then all of a sudden I get to Auburn and I can't hit. So they thought it was kind of fishy that I was playing the team that I always talk about, and you know, football season and everything. Our football team started, or Auburn's football team started off hot, and you know, I always brought it up, and they're like, "You're a Bearcat now, you're a Bearcat now," and yeah, I'm a Bearcat. So our football team is undefeated in our conference, so I'm looking forward to that.
You bring up.
Jeremy Johnson, with us, by the way, just in case you're wondering, a former Auburn baseball player and former Hall of Famer here at the Auburn Network. Just got to work that one in there, Michael. Sorry to cut you off.
No, you're great. So, like you said, they thought you were, I guess, striking out on purpose on that day. And,
he was.
You know, in baseball, we...
You do what you got to do.
Have
absolutely
a lot of
not.
Situations. So we have a lot of situations where guys are going for no-hitters or perfect games or whatever, and we see guys hit, like, you know, random singles to ruin things like that. You mentioned Tanner Burns actually tied the record, beat the record.
Yeah, he tied the record for most strikeouts in a
game. Good company if you're with Casey Mize.
If you were up, you were like the last batter and you were up and you knew he needed that like one more strikeout to break the record.
Let's up the ante. Let's say it's a perfect game. It's a perfect game. Would you take enjoyment?
Well, let's remove that. Let's remove that it's Auburn. Let's remove that it's, you know, a guy you know, a guy you're probably friends with in Tanner Burns, because I think that's a little different.
Yeah.
If a pitcher has lit you guys up, we'll say he's throwing a perfect game, and you're up two outs in the ninth, are you trying to hit the ball, or are you like, I'm just going to let this guy throw his perfect game?
Oh, I'm trying to get a hit. I'm trying to win. Well, okay. We've always had this conversation within the locker room and in baseball. You have this conversation. It kind of depends on the situation. So if it's a close game, say it's like 2-0,
I don't care about your record.
Exactly. Like I'll lay a bunt down if I have to get on base. But you know, the funny thing is about the Auburn situation. So I was actually due up in that last inning, and so actually the final strikeout or final out of the game was supposed to be at my at bat, but I got pinched hit for. So one of my teammates ended up taking that strikeout and tying the record, I guess, for Auburn. So I'm so glad that my coach took me out there. But, yeah, no, I think it kind of depends on the situation. So if it's like a 1-2 ball game, 3-1 ball game, I'm definitely going to try to get a
hit. Trying to win the game.
If we're up by like – or if we're down by like 8 or 9, you know, it's kind of common courtesy to just – I mean, you don't try to get out, but you're not going to lay a bunt down. You're not going to – you know, this is kind of how
it
is.
Are you, if it's a close play, are you sprinting to first base? Say you hit a chopper to third, perfect game's on the line. Are you taking an 85% sprint to the bag?
Well, the record is, a lot of people think I jog down to first base anyway, so I'm probably going to run whatever my pace is. But yeah, no, for sure, I'm not gonna give it to them. I'm going to make them earn it. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to lay a bunt down when we're down by 10 and I see the third baseman back.
This Jeremy Johnson, baseball. One of our favorites. He's with us. Charlie Potter joins us in just a moment. We'll talk Alabama and Auburn from the Alabama side of things. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
We are thrilled to be joined by one of our absolute favorite human beings, former Auburn Tiger. I guess always a Tiger at heart, now with the Cincinnati Bearcats. Michael Pappas joining me. And on the phone, Charlie Potter in to talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide. Charlie, how are you, sir?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me. I thought I was your favorite person for a
minute. Well, you are, especially to talk Alabama. Appreciate you giving us some of your time. Certainly know it's a busy week for you guys, and looking forward to hopefully catching up with you this weekend. Initially, Charlie, what are your thoughts on this team? The whole storyline right now, at least from the Auburn side of things, seems to be revolving around Tua not playing. So let's go somewhere else. Let's start with Mac Jones instead. This is a guy that I feel like a lot of people are just forgetting as a very capable player. We just haven't seen a lot of him.
No, I agree with that. I think he is very capable is a good way to describe him. Obviously, he doesn't get a lot of opportunities because of the player that Tua is. But you know, he's a guy that works with his receivers every day in practice. And I think a lot of the times, not taking anything away from Mac, but when you have these guys at your disposal, you tend to look good on the field. But, you know, Mac has, you know, good arm strength. He's a talented player. He's confident in what he does. And he's a guy that doesn't like to lose. And yeah, he comes from a really strong high school program down in Jacksonville, Florida. And I know that it has just been against Arkansas and Western Carolina, his previous two starts, but you know, he's been efficient. You can't really knock anything that he's done. This is obviously, I guess, Auburn going to be his toughest test, but I think given time in the pocket, I think Mac Jones can do some good things.
Yeah, the other part of that I would say, Charlie, is it's no secret Alabama's got some talented wide receivers. I think they're going to be okay this week, and I will be curious to see how aggressive this offensive staff will be. What's your thought on the play calling? Because as good as the defense is for Auburn, and there's a lot of conversation too about Alabama's defense, and we'll get there, but I don't think Alabama can be overly conservative, do you?
No, not really. I think the game plan is going to be really interesting for me. They've tended to take things kind of easy and slow with Mac in the initial goings of the games. Against Arkansas, we saw a lot of jet sweeps, and that hasn't really been in their repertoire lately. So just a lot of short, quick passes to get his confidence up. Whenever you're a quarterback, you go out there just to complete your first couple passes. Always does wonders for the rest of the game. And I think last week, though, we kind of saw where it's going, maybe the offensive game plan early on. They were taking some shots downfield and trying to get his confidence up in that regard. Because like you said, they do have talented playmakers a wide receiver, guys like Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith, and Henry Ruggs didn't play last week, but I think he'll be available. They're guys that can take the top off of the defense. So, like I said, if he's given time to throw in the pocket, I think he can do some things. But against this Auburn front, that's going to be a really tough challenge for Alabama.
Charlie Potter joining the lunch break this morning. You can find him on Twitter at Charlie_Potter. Check out his work with Bama Online 24/7 Sports. What is Nick Saban's demeanor like during this week? He's such a one game at a time, business minded, every coaching cliche. Him and Gus sort of in the running for saying I guess Coach Saban does give you all some interesting things from time to time, but is he pretty buttoned up during this week?
Sometimes I think it's kind of 50-50. During his opening statement yesterday was his first press conference of the week. He sort of hesitated, but went out and said that Auburn's probably the best team they've faced this year. And granted, everybody knows that Alabama has a loss to number one LSU
right.
Earlier this month. So I think that he is kind of preaching the importance of this game and maybe doing a little bit of campaigning for the college football playoff, because should Alabama win this game and likely win it in convincing fashion, that's probably what would be needed, unless the other people lose like we saw in Oregon. But I think if Alabama wins this game, it's right there in the hunt for the college football playoff, and Nick Saban and his staff certainly know that. So you're going to get your typical answers. Like, that's something he says every week, that this team is the best team we've played so far. But I think this week it's trying to kind of hype up Auburn a little bit, not that they necessarily need it, but with saying things like that, saying things like this is the best defensive front they played, I don't think that's a stretch by any means.
I'm with you.
I just think that I don't detect that he's very buttoned up.
Sure.
But I think at the same time he knows exactly how important this game is, and he doesn't want to say anything just too outlandish to provide any bulletin board material.
The Alabama defense has, I guess, struggled at times this season, and the numbers, I feel like, don't really tell the whole story. Do you think, I know the Auburn offense has had, their own share of struggles this year, but does that worry you or the people around the program at all that, Alabama does kind of have to outscore everyone they play?
think so a little bit. Yeah, I think the defense has played better. Of late, the LSU game is obviously an anomaly and something I think they want to forget. But the biggest thing I think that's been different about this defense this year is they just haven't been that suffocating run defense that we've seen in the past. And going against a team like Auburn, that could be a problem. They've struggled at times to stop mobile quarterbacks. I thought they did a really nice job at Mississippi State with corralling their run offense. Kylan Hill was the SEC's leading rusher, and I know he left the game with an injury late, but he didn't have, I don't think, 50 yards on the ground. But they gave up two or three really explosive plays to Tommy Stevens, who's not just the most athletic dual threat quarterback. So I think that's a concern going into this game, because as you guys know, Auburn likes to run the football, and Bo Nix can do things with his legs. So I think that's been maybe the biggest difference and concern is in years past, you can just kind of hang your hat on that rushing defense, and that hasn't been the case this year. I think that's obviously a point of emphasis and a priority this week. I think the players know that, and I think, like I said, that they want to go out and make a statement for the playoff committee. But, that's a lot of times easier said than done when you're facing a team that likes to run the ball as much as Auburn does.
At @Charlie_Potter on Twitter, you can find him at Bama Online with 24/7 Sports. You mentioned it, Nick Saban saying this is the best team that they've faced. Correct me if I'm wrong there with the wording of that. But, I the LSU loss, obviously, I would say that is the best team that they will have played. But you're right. I think some campaigning on behalf of his team, and wisely so. What's your perception of Alabama fans in this season? Only one loss, but Alabama fans are pretty accustomed to finding themselves in the playoff picture, and they're there right now, but they are on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think they're disappointed, because going into this season, I think everybody looked at the offense that they were going to be able to field, and you just kind of thought that with all those juniors, this might be your best opportunity to coast to a national championship. You had a lot of injuries, though, on the defensive side of the ball that kind of stalled that and stalled those expectations. You lose Dylan Moses, who was their best defensive player before the start of the season. Josh McMillan is a fifth-year senior, and both of those guys are going to lead the defense. With those guys out, you have two freshmen calling the defense, and they took their lumps early on. I think they've settled down a little bit. They're going to be tested this week, but you have so many injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and then you tack on now with Tua out for the season. I think it's just the injuries are something that they're going to look back on and have a lot of what ifs for this season. I know we don't know how it's going to end yet. Like I said, I think if they get a win in Auburn on Saturday and then maybe get a little bit of help from other teams around the country, they can sneak into the playoffs. And you never know what's going to happen there. But I think that going into this year, I think they've expected and thought this was going to be really special, and right now those plans are kind of put on hold. So they're disappointed. Anytime that Alabama loses a game, and that's very few and far between, right. It's a very Armageddon like sequence of events on our message boards and everything like that. But like I said, I think they're well aware of the unfortunate circumstances they've been dealt from an injury standpoint, and I know we were just talking about the defense, but that's kind of shaped the way this defense is transformed this season, and I think a lot of fans are pretty aware of that.
Fans on message boards not showing nuance. Shocked by that. Charlie Potter with us.
Is there any sort of concern at all that the Alabama offense may struggle a little bit against this Auburn defense that has been elite this season?
I think there's a concern just because, like I said, Mac Jones has started two games, but it's been against Arkansas and Western Carolina. I mean, that's not exactly world beaters out there. So I think that keeping him upright, giving him time to make plays is a priority. And, this defensive front, like I said, Nick Saban said it, everybody said it, it's going to be the best one they faced all season. And I think just, maybe provide an extra protection with a tight end, offensive lineman they've used as a tight end, will be something we see a lot. And you're just giving him time to make throws to these receivers, because we've seen he's been able to do that. If he's pressured and, maybe they, have a success in stopping a guy like Najee Harris, then, it could be a long afternoon for Alabama. But I do think that, facing this defense and the challenges it presents is certainly a concern for this coaching staff, and we'll see what kind of game plan they draw up to try to combat that.
Charlie, Could you talk to us about Tua, the severity of his injury, what you know? I think there's a fair amount out there, but some of it seems to be questionable about the severity and what you've heard. And I don't consider this to be very likely, but you do hear whispers of it, people talking about him coming back next season. I would imagine he's off to the NFL, and if you would, try to provide as much clarity as you can about what the doctors think this injury and the recovery time looks like for Tua.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he came back. I don't think it's as severe as the hip injury we've seen in the past. We saw CJ Mosley suffer the same kind of injury in the national championship game against LSU back in 2011, I guess it'd be 2012 when it was actually happening. But he was able to come back, and he's had a very successful NFL career. I think they're kind of expecting the same thing for Tua. Obviously, he still, you know, he broke his nose and everything like that, but that's secondary compared to the dislocated hip that could jeopardize your future. But I don't think that's going to be the case for him. I think he's going to make a full recovery. And the question is now, how quickly can he get back on the field and throw for scouts if that's the choice that he makes to leave? And I think it probably will be. You know, he's a guy that has plenty of tape, is one of the most talented passers in the country, if not the most talented. I think now we've seen the trend of you know, shorter quarterbacks kind of be debunked. We've seen Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield. I mean, Drew Brees kind of started it all. I don't think that's going to be as much a concern for him, but the question for him is going to be his health and how quickly he can get back on the field and throw for scouts, whether it's at the combine, which seems unlikely, maybe at a later pro day for Alabama or individual workouts, whatever it may be. I think that's going to be really important for him. You know, just looking at mock drafts, I know that doesn't really have much bearing on things right now, sitting near the end of November, but there's a lot of people that still have him among the top 15 picks. And I think for Tua, obviously, you know, you lose some money that way, but you probably end up going to a better team. So he's not maybe in Miami or Cincinnati or somewhere like that. So for him, though, the severity of it, I think, you know, he's had a very good prognosis with what he's dealing with. And like I said, the big thing for him, though, is just how quickly can he get back on the field and throw in and showing teams that he's healthy to give them the confidence to draft him and maybe draft him higher than some expect.
Charlie, as we wrap up here, you know, I do think Coach Saban is campaigning a bit here, and again, wisely so. Your thoughts on his comments that Auburn would be the best team that they've faced?
Yeah, I mean, that's something, like I said, he says basically every week. Yeah. I mean, he didn't say it against Western Carolina.
Sure.
But it's a lot of the times when he comes up and, you know, speaks on Mondays and, you know, after practice on Wednesday, he's trying to convey a message. And I think that everyone in that building knows how important this game is. And comments like that further validate that from their head coach. And, you know, he's a big believer in motivation. And guys like Scott Cochran find any and every way they can to motivate these guys. And I think a lot of them know just how tricky the Iron Bowl is, especially when it's played on the plains. And so I think it's, you know, it's not a comment that shocks me. I'll say that when I tweeted it out, there are a lot of LSU fans and Auburn fans that have a lot of opinions about it, but it isn't something I tried to quell it a little bit. Like I said, it's something that happens a lot.
Right.
You take more stock into him saying that Auburn's defensive front is the best they face, because nobody's arguing that. You know, he just always has kind of a message and something he wants to convey when he goes up there and talks to us. And I think that's exactly what it is, that this Auburn team isn't a pushover. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be likely the toughest challenge they've had this year, because, you know, this is a team, you're talking about an Auburn team that it's a good team, they're a top 25 team, but this is a different Alabama team than the one that stepped on the field for LSU. It doesn't have to, it doesn't have those guys on defense. So I think with the circumstances in front of them, this probably is the toughest challenge they've had to play. And I do think that, like I said, it's a form of motivation, but I don't think there's much, you know, lies in that
right.
This is a different Alabama team, and this is going to be the biggest challenge they've had to face, because they are facing it without their star quarterback.
Charlie, you stay busy this week, certainly no exception. Where can people read your work, especially if they want to catch up on Alabama content ahead of the Iron Bowl, and where can people follow you?
Yeah, just over at BamaOnline.com. You said it, Alabama's basketball team has 3 games coming up in the Bahamas, so we'll be pretty busy ahead of the Iron Bowl, but we'll have plenty of stuff on that game as well. And I'm just over at Twitter at Charlie_Potter.
And my final question for you, if you're Auburn, What's the game plan for getting a win against Alabama?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, just getting pressure on Mac Jones and, you know, seeing success with the quarterback runs. That's kind of, like I said, it's been something Alabama struggled with. You know, whether it was John Rhys Plumlee, you know, Joe Burrow, Tommy Stevens had success with it. Alabama's given us some big chunk runs to the quarterback. And if you can, you know, keep drives alive and sustain drives that way, move the chains and, you know, get into the red zone and rely on your running game that way, you're going to have a chance. I think pressuring Mac Jones, getting him uncomfortable, maybe flustering him a little bit, I think that's at the forefront. So this game, I don't think anybody's, you know, going to be surprised by it. I think it's going to be one in the trenches with the play of the offensive defensive line on both sides.
Charlie, man, appreciate it. Certainly know that this is a busy one for you, and we appreciate your insight.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's Charlie Potter, Bama Online. Follow him on Twitter at Charlie_Potter. Michael Pappas is with me. Surprise guest, Jeremy Johnson joins the program. Jeremy, you feel like you learned anything? I feel like you probably have kept up with Auburn football a fair amount from afar.
Oh,
but I don't
sure.
know how much time you have. I don't know how much you've gotten to watch Alabama. Charlie said it. I mean, a lot of people focusing on Tua's absence. But to me, this is now less about Tua and a lot more about Mac Jones.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I've gotten a good chance to watch Auburn play this year. I've gotten a good chance to watch Alabama play. I don't really like watching a lot of their games because they're usually...
they're rolling.
Yeah, they're
not interested.
It's a first half game. Maybe. But that LSU game, man, that was a fun game to watch. I made a joke about this on Twitter. I was like, that LSU-Alabama game is probably the best Big 12 football game I've ever seen.
It did feel like that, right?
Oh, yeah, it was a shootout.
I've seen Big 12 fans and other, I guess, SEC detractors. I think it's Joel Klatt and, like, Danny Cannell. And one of their favorite points to bring up is, hey, for, like, the better part of a decade, your conference, like, the big knock has been we don't play defense. And now your conference happens to look a lot like ours. I will say, though, last year Oklahoma's scoring defense was 95th in the country. So not very good. And I think we've got a great game on our hands. Let us know what you think. 3-2-1-13-90. This will be a fascinating Iron Bowl that Auburn fans, while they may act like it does not mean what it normally means, if they win or lose, the reaction will be strong next Monday. We'll get to break here. Appreciate Charlie Potter joining us. If you miss any of the lunch break, be sure to check out the podcast presented by University Ace Hardware. More lunch break straight ahead.
You're on the lunch break on ESPN 106.7.
We appreciate Charlie Potter joining us for a few minutes, catching up with him, getting some insight, intel, all that jazz on the Alabama Crimson Tide ahead of the Iron Bowl. Jeremy Johnson joining us today here on the lunch break. 3-2-1-13-90 is how you can join the show. Shadow has patiently held, so let's get the Shadow now. What's up, Shadow?
Well, I told you yesterday I was going to call and give you the score today. I want to preface this first off, and I say that Auburn, you know, if you really want to get a typical, a very good look at the effect of Auburn's pass defense, pull up the Montgomery Advertiser today and look on the front page of the sports section, and what you will see is an Alabama receiver in the end zone looking back and his hands stretched out and the ball is coming and I hadn't quite got there yet, and you see an Auburn defender that has run into the receiver. The ball hadn't even got there. Auburn ain't got a chance in heck to even knock it down or intercept it. They've been doing it for 3 or 4 years in a row. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be at least 4 pass interference calls on Auburn, and it's not going to go their way. I know the crowd will be screaming and they'll be all upset, but Auburn's not going to get no breaks. They ain't got no breaks all year long. Alabama's going to win the game. I think it's probably going to be 27-17. I don't know if that's going to be enough to impress the voters, but what you're going to see is Gus Malzahn with his conservative fear-filled play calling, and you're going to see Nick Saban open the playbook to a quarterback who ain't never even started a game and going to expect him to operate like a coach should trust his quarterback. And I just, once again, you're seeing the aggressiveness of Nick Saban whip up on the conservative, fear-filled emotion of Gus Malzahn. Auburn goes down again. At the end of the season, Auburn's 8-4, and the administration ain't got no expectation to win championships at Auburn. They're going to keep Gus Malzahn for another year, and next year, without a defense and no offensive line, you better hope you qualify for a bowl game. Where am I wrong?
I certainly agree that Auburn Shadow just cannot expect to get favorable calls in this game. Generally speaking, I don't want to wear my tinfoil hat here, but yeah, I think it's fair to assume, based on the way things have gone this year, if it's close, Auburn needs to win by knockout and not by a decision. Other than that, you know, we've talked about the pass interference thing, and I get why that bothers you. Auburn's played really well defensively, as you mentioned, and their secondary has been good. That's just the way that they're going to play their defensive backs, and whether or not you agree with it, it's not going to change. So in terms of the aggressiveness and play calling, I actually think that Gus Malzahn will be aggressive. That may not be a popular opinion because I know a lot of people feel like it's too bland, too vanilla. I don't think he can afford to be conservative in this game. Although Alabama has not looked themselves completely on the defensive side of the ball, they're individually talented. They'll be well coached heading into this game. I just think their athletes are too good for Auburn to be really conservative. Michael, your thoughts on that call, on the officiating? Shadow has Auburn losing, I think, 27-17. And, you know, you look at all of Auburn's games against the best teams, if they can get to 24 points, which Shadow doesn't seem to think they can do, and I think there are a lot of Auburn fans that would agree with him, they're probably not going to win this one. That's sort of been the benchmark for this team.
I don't think that Gus can be conservative in this game, and I think that he's typically not in the Alabama game. I mean, even going back to 2013 when there was the play to Sammy Coates that we hadn't seen all season. I want to say that the jump pass was first brought out by Gus Malzahn in the Alabama game with Kerryon Johnson. I think Gus knows the importance of the Iron Bowl. I think it would be really hard for him not to, and I think this is the one where he really will empty the playbook.
He's got no reason to hold back. I mean, again, I said this at the beginning of the year, and I hold true to it. Gus could go 8-4 this year and very well keep his job. We also said in a worst-case scenario, like, it's possible he could win more games and not be back, but didn't think that's likely. All now knowing what we know about how those games went, how they lost the games, how they won the games, how the offense and defenses looked in those losses, I still think he's back even with the loss, but it gets hairier next year. Shadow, we appreciate the call, and I'm with you, Michael. I don't think there's any reason to be uber conservative in this game. Your quarterback has now played almost an entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think his job relies on it, but it's definitely going to change the entire narrative of the offseason if you beat a top five team and it's your biggest rival. And it's a team that, quite frankly, very few people have beaten over the last decade. Let's get to break here when we come back.
Really fast, before we go to break, yeah. I'm going to ask you a question. We're going to answer it after.
All right.
A nice tease here. Auburn beats Alabama and wins their bowl game, they'll be 10-3, right?
Yep, they'll have a 10-win season, which have been hard to come by for Auburn, especially consecutively, but in general.
Okay. If Alabama loses to Auburn, they'll drop to 10-2.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm guessing they're just not going to care about their bowl game, and the majority of their good players are going to go pro, and I honestly wouldn't be shocked if a bunch of them don't play in their bowl game. So there's a decent chance Alabama goes and loses their bowl game also, and both teams could finish 10-3.
We've got some history to talk about with that scenario when we come back. You're listening to The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Follow The Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
So Michael posed the question. I think it's a good one, and it's got a lot of hypotheticals attached to it, but we'll get to what's on tonight in a moment. David Housel, former athletic director and SID at Auburn, will join us. We'll talk with him about the Iron Bowl and some Iron Bowls of past. Right before break, Michael, you posed the question what?
My question is, I don't think I even asked the question before break, but the question is, does it change the perception of Auburn's season if Auburn and Alabama both end up 10-3?
I think yes, because Auburn is constantly, whether or not they want to admit it, comparing itself and fans are comparing themselves to Alabama. So perhaps, especially if that includes a win over Alabama, which in this scenario it would have to.
Yeah, because if Auburn beats Alabama, Alabama drops to 10-2, and Auburn would go to 9-3. And then Auburn's got to win its bowl game to get to 10-3. And Alabama, where it gets a little hairy is Alabama, if they lose their bowl game, they'll get to 10-3 also. The real big hypothetical that Painter and I kind of threw around also during the break is that for really the first time, we could see a large portion of a starting lineup on a team not play in a bowl game.
Right, so the question here has become one over the last 5 or so years that we in the media, fans, and players certainly have had to wrestle with. If you are almost certainly either going to declare or certainly going to be drafted, do you play in your bowl game? And in this sport, the interesting part of football is more so than I think any sport, not being there with your teammates is considered inexcusable. And so you've got the question, the personal question is, what do you think the upside is in finishing your last game if you're Jerry Jeudy or Raekwon Davis or any number of potential first-round picks they could have, or even second- or third-day guys? But certainly if you are one of the 30 guys off the board, you know you're going to be there. Do you risk injury? And you pointed out Jeudy is a great example, or even Najee Harris, where all it takes is one weird play, and it could really injure your prospects of making a lot of money.
Yeah, we talk about it with football all the time, how, you know, it's a game of inches and how it's all it takes is one fluky play. I mean, even look at Tua. He gets injured on, you know, kind of a fluky play. Looks like a normal tackle and just wasn't. And if
we've
got,
you know, I think we've got some things to point to. Like after the second year of Saban in the bowl game, didn't really look like Alabama showed up. They lost to Utah. In 2010, it seemed like they took out all their frustration on Michigan State. And you pointed out, I guess it was 2013, probably played in 2014, but the 2013 season, Trevor Knight, Oklahoma runs all over Alabama. Well, they mm-hmm. won by 2 touchdowns. So, and, like, do they care? Because losing, say in this scenario, you know, having 2 or 3 losses is a territory they're not used to being in unless it includes a playoff loss.
Yeah, having 2 losses and going to a bowl with really nothing to play for but for fun is somewhere Alabama hasn't been. And you can just run through the guys on this team that we think are going to declare for the draft and are going to be, you know, day one or day two picks, whether it's Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, Najee Harris. I believe there's an offensive tackle also, although I don't know his name. Raekwon Davis, like you said, Xavier McKinney, the safety. Quandre Diggs, I believe his name is Quandre Diggs, the cornerback. Like, it's all over the board. I mean, that's 7 or 8 guys right there that potentially could be like, I'm going to be a day one or day two pick. I don't want to play in this game because if I tear my ACL, I'm going to cost myself a bunch of money.
321-1390, let us know what you think. How will this season end for Auburn and Alabama? Would you play? Should Alabama players play, especially if they know that they are likely to be drafted in the first round? 321-1390. Let's now take a moment as we wrap up hour one. David Housel joins us in just a few minutes to look at what's on tonight.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
We've got a lot on tonight, Painter.
All right.
Across multiple sports.
Wow.
We'll start with college basketball, and we're going to start in the top 25 at 1:30 p.m. on ESPN2. Formerly undefeated UGA is going to play number three in the country, Michigan State.
Did you see the crowd for that game? The Dayton, the Dayton fans traveled.
Yeah.
Dayton Georgia loves their lost, basketball. And Georgia lost handily, but
Michigan State also lost last night.
Yeah, and Izzo took the brunt of that. Mm-hmm. He said, "This is on me." They're now 3-2. Virginia Tech with the first year coach.
Yep. So that game's on ESPN2 at 1:30, pretty quick after we wrap up. At 6:30 p.m. on ESPN2, number 18, Auburn, playing Richmond in the finals of that tournament in Brooklyn. 9:30 p.m. on ESPN, number 4, Kansas, is playing BYU. And 10:30 on ESPN2, number 21, Colorado, is playing Clemson. At 5 p.m. on CBS, Wichita State and South Carolina. And 6 p.m. on ESPN News, OU is playing Mizzou. Also tonight, the Maui Invitational, the semifinals of that. I don't even know who's playing in that, but you can listen to that right here on ESPN 106.7. Yes. That starts at 6:30. At 5 p.m. on ESPN Plus, the University of Ohio, the Bobcats, are going to take on the Akron Zips. That's in football, boys. We got Maction tonight. 6 p.m. ESPNU, Western Michigan and Northern Illinois. That's also football. In the NBA tonight, 7:30 p.m. on NBA TV, the Clippers are going to take on the Mavs and Luka Doncic, who is the best basketball player who ever lived.
He is having quite the season. There's no doubt about that.
He's 20 years old, and he's averaging like a 30-point triple-double in the last week and a half. It's unreal. Unreal. He's on my fantasy team. I'm kicking everyone's butt.
Luke alive when you cross the street, because he's going to cross you up.
7 p.m.
No wordplay there? No? Luke alive, baby.
7 p.m. on NBC Sportsnet. The Dallas Stars are at the Chicago Blackhawks.
I can't believe that you just moved on from my wordplay. You did not acknowledge it. We love corny wordplay here.
It's Luca. Come on. It's Luca.
All right. All right, Mr. Italian.
Finally, movie pick tonight, 6 p.m. on AMC. Ooh. Get in the spirit. It's Elf.
Elf. I haven't watched that one in a minute.
Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick tonight, 8:45 p.m. on HBO Comedy.
R.I.P.
The A-Team.
Is
the
Elf,
new one.
Is Elf, has it been around long enough? Does it fall into the category of cult classic yet, or is it not? Is it just...
Oh, dude, it's just a classic.
It's just a classic,
it's a classic Christmas movie. Classic just Christmas classic. Movie. 10 p.m. on HGTV, House Hunters International is in Rincon, Puerto Rico.
Oh, look at you rolling that R. Okay. Well, that's about it here in hour one. We got about 2 minutes to go here in hour one. David Housel will join us at the top of hour two. We should have some updates from Gus Malzahn in just a little bit. We'll have audio of that later on as well. 321-1390. It's how you can join the show, and there's a number of ways to stay involved, whether it's at ESPN1067 on Twitter, at ESPNAU.com, and with the ESPN1067 app, plus your smart speaker. ESPN1067 on smart devices is powered by Point Broadband. David Housel joining us next. We'll talk Auburn hoops, too, what you can expect from the Richmond Spiders. Auburn looking good last night, got another big win over a solid team. Solid, sort of a vague term. Nonetheless, Michael, your quick thoughts on Auburn's impressive win, undefeated thus far, and looking really good. Very athletic squad. And I'm seeing a lot of folks nationally saying, well, I might have to pay a little bit more attention to this Bruce Pearl team than we thought.
Yeah, credit Bruce Pearl. People didn't think that he was going to be able to reload the way that he has looking sure. at this season. A rather inefficient game for the Auburn offense, but the defense was incredible. They hit their three-pointers at a respectable clip. I think it was just above 30%. Mm-hmm. And the efficiency, I think, is going to come. Smear Dowdy, not the most efficient game, but led the team in scoring again, if I'm not mistaken. And he looks like he's going to be the number one option on offense. Javon McCormick's got to settle in to – he's got to kind of find his role. Super inefficient for him, 3 of 14 from field goals, but he does have 6 assists. And I think he's got to be more of the facilitator, less of the scorer. Need to get that shot number down, but they're going to figure it out. I'd like to see more minutes from Turbo Jones.
Coach Pearl said he would be a guy that would be critical to their success this season. Auburn, you mentioned defense, forced 24 turnovers. That's a season high, and they took control of the game in the first half when they went on a 16-0 run. So we will talk more about that in hour two. David Housel joins us next to talk about the Iron Bowl this year and in years past. 321-1390, as always, the number to get you through here at ESPN 106.7. Michael Pappas is with me. Justin Ferguson is with Gus Malzahn. We'll talk more football and basketball in hour two. Stay with us. This is The Lunch Break.
Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390. Toll free 1-888-382-7502 or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Hour two underway here. David Housel joining us on the phone, and we're going to open up the phone lines for a few minutes as well if you want to chat with David. How are you, sir? Good to have you on again.
I'm doing fine. How are you, Painter?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. Thank you for emphasizing the T, something that a lot of folks around here don't do. So a week that you're really go ahead.
Why do you emphasize the T, Painter, instead of Painter? It's Painter.
You're right. That is correct. I think it's just a Southern thing, you know. We're a little bit lazy with the ends of our words. Sometimes we let them drip down just a bit. Painter is how it comes out a little more naturally, don't you think?
I think so, but I don't believe all Southerners are lazy.
No, I did that. You know what? That could have come across the wrong way. But I think sometimes we're a little bit lazy with how we end some of our pronunciations.
I'm just razzing you. Let's continue.
Yes, sir. A week you're familiar with, David. I want to start, though. It's 30 years. I think you've gotten this question a number of times. Almost a religious experience the first time Alabama came to Jordan-Hare Stadium.
No question about it. People of this day and time can't imagine, can't comprehend, can't understand what it was like on December the 2nd. When Auburn people made a trip, they never thought they'd make. They were always told it'll never happen, and Auburn's not good enough to host the game. Auburn doesn't have facilities, but it did happen. And Coach Dye said it was like the Berlin Wall coming down, and I said it was like the children of Israel heading to the Promised Land for the first time. It's been reenacted many times and will be reenacted again Saturday, but there's only one first time. And people of this generation will never understand. They can't understand, which is a good thing.
Can you describe what at all that felt like and what maybe you remember most? Because I can imagine from everything I've heard, it was just a few years before I was born, but from everything I've heard, it was an integral moment and very much felt, I think, validating to the Auburn fan base.
Well, it was validating, and I think anytime somebody else can tell you where to play your games, especially your games against your biggest rival, anytime somebody else can dictate where you play, then you're not totally in control of your program. And that day, Auburn became a full-fledged member of Southeastern Conference of college football. It was the final brick, as Coach Dye said, in Auburn's program. Auburn can't blame, if Auburn doesn't win Saturday, Auburn can't blame the loss on where the game was played. Auburn's got a second advantage. Auburn has no more excuses once that game started going home and home.
321-1390, if you want to join us here, David Housel on the line. You're welcome to speak with him as I do right now. David, you've been a part of a lot of really neat moments in Auburn sports history, but specifically with the Iron Bowl, is there a year outside of 89 that stands out to you for any reason?
Well, I think 89, obviously 72. I think 63, 10-8. Auburn had not scored on Alabama in 4 years. As my friend Francis Sanders said, he worked all those games on the sideline. He was glad to see those first three points go up there. He didn't think that side of the scoreboard worked. But that was a big one. 69, Connie Frederick's fake punt. All of those are big games. I guess you'd have to say 72 is right up there. Kick six, obviously. But, 1989 was special in and unto itself. Do you think kick six would have happened at Legion Field? Well, on the one hand, yeah, but on the other hand, no. He did get mighty close to that sideline.
David, any traditions that you have before the Iron Bowl? Anything you like to do? I don't know how superstitious of a person you are, but a lot of fans, a lot of fanatics, as you point out, they have their traditions, they have their superstitions. What about you?
Well, I think there's a difference in a tradition, something that you do over and over, and a superstition, mm-hmm. something that you do because you think it helps the cause. I've got my superstitions, yes, but if I told you, they wouldn't work anymore, so I'm not going to say
that.
They kind of vary depending on how the game's going.
Speaking of how the game's going, how do you think this one will go this week? I'm optimistic. I think it'll be close, but I think Auburn wins this game.
Well, I know who's going to win. Without question, I know who's going to win.
Okay. Are you going to tell us or are you going to keep us guessing?
Team with the most points.
All right. A good answer.
I think Alabama overall is probably still the stronger team.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps you can say the better team, but that doesn't mean they'll win. I think Auburn has a chance to win the game, perhaps a good chance. I do not think Alabama not having Tua automatically means Auburn's going to win. Auburn's going to have to play well. Auburn can play well. I don't think the fact that Alabama's quarterback will be the substitute and the backup quarterback is anything Auburn people ought to be gloating about, because I remember in 2001 when Tyler Watts was hurt. He was Alabama's starter. He was hurt, and they substituted Andrew Zhao, and he ran and threw all over us and beat us 31-7. I think Auburn has a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they will win it or not, I don't know. Nobody knows.
Former director of athletics at Auburn, David Hauser.
I'm cautiously hopeful, let's put it that way.
Yes, sir. Former director of athletics David Hauser joining the show. There was a stretch there, I guess, in the 70s up into the early 80s, where Alabama really dominated this rivalry. Auburn, though, over this stretch run where Nick Saban has been really good, one of the few teams that's managed to beat him more than one time. You and I are both guys that have a lot of respect for Coach Saban, because we're impressed by how disciplined and how well-run that organization is. How key do you think it is that Auburn managed to finally end that run in the 80s, and did it sort of shift the tide on the way that series would be played over the next three or so decades?
I think Coach Dye's and Auburn's win in 1982, 23-22, changed the whole focus of the game. Auburn could never have gotten the Alabama game here as long as we were losing to Alabama every year. I think the decade of the 80s changed the whole chemistry of the game and the rivalry.
David, we have Olin on the line. We are going to allow him to ask you a question. Let me know, make sure you can hear him. Olin, whenever you're ready, go ahead.
David, this is Olin. Listen, I really love the books that you've written. We moved from Tuscaloosa down to Auburn in 1947, so I guess I'm a little bit older than you. But my question is, when was the first Auburn game that you went to?
Auburn, Alabama, 1956, Auburn 34, Alabama 7.
Yeah, mine was in 1948, and it was 56 or something like that to nothing. But then I was there the next year.
What? Don't give them more credit than they deserve. It wasn't but 55, not 56.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Lord. Well, listen, I really love your book. I on Chuck Jordan. I went back. I had a copy of it, and I was rumbling around the other day and found it, and read it again. And I would suggest that every Auburn fan read your book. Go back and find it where you write about the importance of Coach Beard and Coach Jordan and what they put together at Auburn and how they did it. It's a fantastic book, and I think it's a real backbone that our program still lives on.
Well, you know, Coach Beard and Coach Jordan, but especially Coach Beard, the athletic director, they have become lost in the shadows of history. When Coach Beard was named athletic director, the Auburn Athletic Department was bankrupt. They weren't going to be able to open the doors except Coach Beard and Coach Jordan went to Auburn Bank and told Bobby Blake, we can't have a team unless we get some money. So he loaned them, I think it was $50,000, to start the athletic program in 1951. He didn't loan it to Auburn Athletic Department. He loaned it to Chuck Jordan and to Jeff Beard personally because he knew that they were the kind of men who would get it turned around. And they did get it turned around. But to think of not being able to open the doors to charging $140 for the Auburn Alabama tickets and making hundreds of millions of dollars now, you know, Coach Beard and Coach Jordan, they were a tandem. They were a team. They turned it around. And had they not turned it around, Auburn might not even be in Southeastern Conference. We might be like Tulane or somebody like that. But they turned it around. They kept Auburn competitive. And nobody ever thinks about Coach Beard anymore.
Olin, appreciate your call and your question. David, another question for you. You spent the majority, or at least a lot of your professional career working at Auburn. Is there a singular moment that you can recall on, whether it was a game, whether it was an interaction with a student athlete, that sticks out to you?
Well, for me, December 2nd, 1989.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, dude.
I mean, that's just an honest answer.
Yeah, no, I think it resonates.
You work all your life for Auburn. You try to help Auburn be as good as it can be. And then you're a part of bringing that game to Auburn. It was, you know, people in this day and time, hardly anybody listening to your radio show, hardly anybody can understand what it was like in those times. We read about the Depression, but we can't really understand it unless you live it. Well, in terms of having to play Alabama and Birmingham every year, we lived it. We understand.
David, greatly appreciate your time, some of your insight. Is there anything else I didn't ask you or anything else you wanted to briefly touch on? I certainly appreciate all of your insight.
Oh, I'd just say War Eagle.
All right, David. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for making time for us. Good to hear from you.
See you later. Okay.
That's David Housel, I think one of the kindest and most empathetic people I've had the pleasure of knowing, and I think many of you who also know him and have spent any time around David would feel similarly. We'll get to break. When we come back, we'll do what we put off for a little bit. We'll talk about Auburn football as it pertains to Gus Malzahn. Justin Ferguson is with Coach Malzahn. We'll update you on what Coach had to say ahead of this week's huge matchup, the Iron Bowl.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 1067.
So, a shout out to Director of Athletics, former Director of Athletics, David Housel, for joining us, giving us a little history lesson, Michael, on the Iron Bowl. And sometimes even prior to the 1989 Iron Bowl, a storyline that's popped back up again this year as it's been 30 years since the Crimson Tide made their first trip down to Auburn and Jordan-Hare Stadium. Appreciate the call. Olin James, feel free to call back 321-1390 if you want to join the show That's how you can do it. You can follow along at ESPN 1067 and, of course, at ESPNAU.com and with the ESPN 1067 app. Auburn basketball rolls yet again, Michael, in an impressive game. And it's impressive more because of their defense than anything. They forced a season-high 24 turnovers and really took control of the game in the first half when it was still tight. They went on a 16-0 run and held the Lobos scoreless for more than 7 minutes.
Yeah, they were. The defense was dominant. I think they had 14 steals and 6 blocks. But for me, the real story of this game is Austin Wiley. This was, I think, the best game that he's played as an Auburn Tiger. 6 of 8 from the field, 13 rebounds. He did foul out. Not overly concerned about that. 14 points. He played as many minutes as Anfernee Macklemore, which is a little different. Up until this point in the season, Macklemore has been playing more than Wiley. So I thought Austin Wiley played his best game. Justin tweeted out last night that he's second or third in the country in defensive rebounding percentage.
Yeah.
Second in the country. He was incredible.
It was a good performance for Auburn, especially defensively. They hit more than 40% of their shots from the field. Three-point shooting, not terrible, not great. 31%, they were 12 of 38. Free throw percentage for the Tigers, a little surprising here, and something that I am sure Coach Pearl will bring up. They only shot 40%. They were 8 of 20, so not great there, but they cleaned up the boards. They won that battle 45 to 43, and they out-rebounded the Lobos 19-14 on the boards offensively. So I thought that was a big difference. When you look individually, you mentioned this, I believe, Michael, some inefficiency. Pierre Ford, 3 of 11 from the field, while Javon McCormick, 3 of 14. But those guys did some things in other areas. 5 boards for Pierre Ford, 3 assists, while McCormick added 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and 7 points. So, you know, I'm not overly concerned. You mentioned Wiley fouling out, same thing. I think Coach Pearl mentioned the team did not play a great game, all things considered. There's a lot of room for improvement. This is a good team that will have success in their league. Might not win it, but they'll be near the top of it. Maybe they'll win it. Auburn's played an interesting schedule to this point. They've got the Richmond Spiders coming up tonight.
And Richmond is a good team. I believe they made the tournament last year. They should do well again. I want to say they won a game in the tournament last year also. I'm not positive about that. They should do well in their conference also. I mean, this is a good out-of-conference game. You kind of wish they were playing Wisconsin because, you know, you get that name recognition. And if Wisconsin can make noise in the Big Ten, obviously that looks better for Auburn. But at the end of the day, you can only play the teams that are in front of you. And this is a good Richmond team that Auburn's going to play tonight. And hopefully they shoot better than 42.7% from the field or whatever it was. That's not very good, to put it frankly. And Auburn's going to have to be better than that once they get into conference play especially. But this is a good – I mean, we're going to sit here and say that, you know, they didn't really play that well on offense and they still were up by 30 points in the game and won by 25. So all in all, I think it's a good performance from Auburn. Definitely some stuff to learn from. Got to be more efficient. Purifoy didn't have a good game. McCormick, like we said, very.
He did some things. You know, I want to, you know, he didn't shoot efficiently, nor did Purifoy, but they did do some things by setting up teammates and getting rebounds. So, like, offensively, there is something to be desired in terms of shooting, but I want to give those guys some credit in some other areas, too.
Yep. Purifoy has looked like such a more complete basketball player this season than he has in the past. He's engaged. He's working hard on defense. He's got his body in great shape. So looking forward, I mean, no worries at all. Purifoy and Wiley seem to have finally like grown into their bodies, and it's great. They both look great. They're playing great. This is Auburn is very exciting on the defensive side of the ball, and I think the offense is going to come.
3-2-1-13-90. Join us here on the lunch break. Looks like Gus Malzahn has stepped up to the podium.
Finally.
We've got Justin Ferguson on the case. He says that Coach Malzahn says offensively one of the best in the country, talking about Alabama, one of the most explosive, if not the most explosive. He goes on to add, quote, this will be our fifth top 10 opponent, so it won't be a shock to our system. Hopefully, it'll be an advantage for us. Yeah, does that matter at all to you? I mean, Auburn is about as battle-tested of a team, probably outside of Texas A&M and South Carolina, that you can find. And to Auburn's credit, they have managed to win one of those games. Now, South Carolina did that over Georgia. However, outside of that game, they've been horrific. So I do think it matters to some extent. Like, when I looked at the first quarter of the Alabama-LSU game, it seemed to me like Alabama, they did fine on the first drive. And then I thought the game, the tempo of the game, they just looked a little bit sluggish, probably because they hadn't played anybody like that for half the season. And then they got they kind of tightened things up, and it looked more like the Alabama teams that we're accustomed to. It just looked to me like they were a little bit rusty because they'd been running over teams all season until they got to LSU, and that's essentially been the case since that loss.
They made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes in that first half, a lot of mental mistakes. And for this Alabama team, I mean, they're very vulnerable, especially on the defensive side of the ball. If you go back even to the Tennessee game, Tennessee ran all over them. And the linebackers for Alabama struggled with staying in gaps and, you know, making the right plays when they needed to be made. And for an Auburn team that really wants to run the football, I mean, that's a great blueprint. We even saw Darren Sproles have a great game for LSU in that game. So I just, all in all, I don't think this is a vaunted Alabama team. They've got an incredible offense that's really founded on big plays. They don't put a ton of drives together. It's a lot of individual stuff. We've talked a lot throughout the season about how these wide receivers are world class, and a lot of times it seems like, you know, they're getting 5-yard completions that are going for 75, 80 yards. I mean, even in that LSU game we were just talking about, they scored mainly on big plays. And Najee Harris has come on and been absolutely incredible as of late. He's got like a rushing touchdown and a receiving touchdown in all of the last 3 or 4 games, I think. So the offense is well-rounded. The offense is founded on big plays, but Auburn also has an incredible defense who's limiting yards per attempt for quarterbacks to like 5.6 or something.
It seems, again, like if Auburn can get to about 24 points like they did at the beginning of the year. What was the final of the Oregon game? Was it 23-20? It's been a few weeks and I've already forgotten.
I don't know.
If you'll check that for me. But it kind of feels like the other games Auburn's also lost, which is if they can get to about 24 points, that seems to be the mark with which the defense has held. And I think there's a chance that they can do that, as I think that they will win this
27-21.
All right, there you go. See, why do you all listen? We'll get to break here. 321-1390, we will follow up with more on Gus Malzahn's press conference as he is meeting with media members. And we said finally, but I should note, Michael, that this one was scheduled for 12:15, so it was later than we're accustomed to Gus taking the podium. We'll get to break now. Remember, if you miss any of the show and you'll want to hear today's show, as Charlie Potter gives us Alabama intel and David Housel, former director of athletics, joined the show. You can do that with the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, you name it. That is brought to you by the good folks at University Ace Hardware.
Listen to the Lunch Break on the Abbey Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app. The Lunch Break continues on ESPN 106.7. Call us at 321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Gus Malzahn speaking with media members. Follow along at Jay Ferguson AU. Justin has you covered. Keeping you updated on everything that happens this week. Gus adds a few comments.
He's been talking up Derrick Brown a whole bunch. He thinks Derrick Brown should be a finalist for the Heisman.
Said he thinks, you know, he realized it's usually an award for offensive players, but there aren't many out there that are better. I know that we, having covered Brown for a few years, are probably a little partial to that statement. But I think it's pretty objective that he's been one of the best players all year. This is an interesting tweet from Justin. Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn, slightly out of context, Justin adds, quote, I believe in God. I don't believe in a football God. I'd be curious to get Justin's take on how that came about when he joins us tomorrow. And yeah, to your point about the Heisman conversation, quote, "I know that Heisman usually is for offensive players and all that, but I can't think there are too many players better than him." Also, Malzahn adding of the Iron Bowl, and I think I read this out earlier, this is going to be their fifth top 10 opponent of the year. And Gus Malzahn has taken note of that. And he went on to add, look, this isn't going to be a surprise for us. Alabama's played one game like this against LSU. And I thought for part of the first quarter, it did take them a little bit of time to adjust. Shouldn't be the case for Auburn.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It shouldn't. And Gus also says it's his 10th Iron Bowl. So he and Nick Saban know each other pretty good. Mm-hmm. They'll see what happens. He said Mike Horton and J.J. Wilson both practiced yesterday. They'll practice today and should be good for the Iron Bowl. I mean, things are really looking up for Auburn heading in. It looks like they're getting healthy. School's out. Auburn football back to its regular schedule. Today's their big work day, Gus Malzahn said. So, I don't know. He says on how planning changes with Mac Jones instead of Tua at quarterback, Gus said he's got unbelievable talent all around. We've got the game or two on him, and you can see he has a good understanding of the offense. You've just got to predict how much they're going to put on him. So we will see they can do that.
You've got a stale, non-bulletin board-giving coach in Gus Malzahn, and Saban can be more than stale, but he is not one to provide much to chew on in the way of giving other teams motivation. Both coaches talking very highly of the other, both essentially saying it'll be one of the best, if not the best team they've played all year. Interesting, as they've both played the number one team in the country. Mm-hmm. I get the point, though. I get what they're saying. It means a lot to both of them for different reasons, too, right? You've got Coach Malzahn, who I think is back next year for a number of reasons. One, because I think he wins this game, and two, because I don't think 8-4 is enough to get him out of here, and we could go on and on, but let's put that aside. That sort of sets the scene on top of you've won one really big game, and it was the non-conference. Like, you, all of your biggest games in conference, you have lost close to. This is going to be another close game. Auburn needs to find a way, in my mind, to win a close, big conference game. And for Saban, they're trying to find a backdoor into the playoff.
Yeah.
They haven't missed the playoff since it started.
Yeah, you're totally right. I agree with you. I think Gus is going to be back, but this would definitely help ease the critics a little bit, I think, if they can go out and win this game. And it looks like they're focused. They're ready. I mean, you don't need, Gus said this too, you don't need extra motivation going into the Iron Bowl. And I think this team is going to come out ready to play. Like I said earlier, I think Gus is going to empty the playbook. I mean, this is the big one. He talked a little bit about Bo Nix playing some of the top defenses in college football and how that makes you grow up real quick. And I think we've seen growth out of Bo Nix this season, and we'll see how that translates into the Iron Bowl, and we'll see, you know, how ready Alabama is to get smacked in the mouth, because that's what's going to happen.
Also, Gus Malzahn adds throwback to the 2010 Iron Bowl. When asked about Philip Lutzenkirchen's catch that won that game, quote, "That was Coach Chizik's favorite play. We called it there, and it worked." So a shout-out, I guess, to Coach Chizik and to Lutzenkirchen, old Lutzy there. 321-1390, if you want to join us here on the lunch break. Michael Pappas, Painter Sharp, is talking about Gus Malzahn. He's taking the podium. We are getting a caller right now. Michael, we've gotten some injury updates. If you would, real quick, read those out again for us. How's Auburn looking in terms of injuries?
Yeah, so apparently J.J. Wilson has been practicing, and so has Mike Horton. They both practiced Monday. They're both going to practice today. So it does look like Auburn is getting healthy.
321-1390, Reed's on the line. What's up, Reed?
Hey, guys. I just had a couple questions. One, I thought the conversation with former AD Housel was outstanding. And,
thank you.
He gave a lot of good insight into just Auburn history. And I think he's probably one of the more underappreciated guys that has to do with Auburn athletics.
Strongly agree.
Most of the glamour that goes to that time period revolves around Pat Dye, and
right.
I agree that he deserves a whole heck of a lot of credit, but Housel played a key role in that time period as well, and I think he gets almost flies under the radar a little bit. So that was a great conversation with him. I just was going to see if the sort of added pressure for Alabama, if maybe they come into Jordan Hare and blow us out. I don't think that they're capable of that necessarily with their defense not being able to stop a lot of people. But they come in and try to blow us out. Does that add any extra just worry to y'all that maybe the Tide has a little extra motivation coming in the game?
I think it's something to consider. We talked to Charlie Potter earlier in the show in hour one, and he mentioned, you know, Alabama playing for a playoff berth here, and one thing that would help their chances as they won't get a shot in the SEC championship is if they can run the score up on Auburn, because no team has been able to do that, LSU, Georgia, or Florida. So I don't know if concern is necessarily in my mind. I just don't think they're going to be able to, Reed, but I think it's got to be a goal for Alabama, not just to win this game, but to do so convincingly.
Oh, I agree completely. And it almost is one of those things that could potentially work in our favor if they come in and press, maybe try to do too much against our really strong defense, maybe force a couple of turnovers and help set our offense up in plus territory, because I think that's what it's going to take for us to win the game. So, anyway, I was just curious to hear your thoughts. Hope we come up out on top on Saturday, and just want to say thank you to Dr. Housel again.
Hey, Reed, are you going to be in town for this one?
I will be there Wednesday, Paint.
All right.
Yeah, Thanksgiving with the family in Auburn. So.
Good deal. Be easy, and hope to catch up with you soon. Thanks for the call, Reed.
Yes, sir.
Great call. Good point there. Yeah, I do think that a lot of credit obviously should go to Coach Dye and his staff for that run there in the 80s that bled into the 90s, but also a good point from Reed that Housel quietly worked behind the scenes to make some of that possible. Also, to his point, Michael, any concern for you about, I think Reed makes a good point, in fact, that Alabama needs to be aggressive in this game for a number of reasons. One, I simply think that Auburn's defense demands that you can't sit back. Also, as he points out, Alabama doesn't just need to win this game. I think they need to do it in an impressive fashion. That doesn't mean they need to do it by three touchdowns, but something like the score we saw in 2017 where Auburn got a double-digit victory over Alabama. I think that's in the back of their minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is – style points do matter for the playoff as much as we'd like to sit back and act like they don't.
And this is a little better, at least because it's style points against a team that's in the top 20 – that's played a bunch of good teams. Like, you're not trying to get style points on FAU. That, to me, is when it's like, I don't care if you can beat a non-conference opponent or, you know, the second-to-worst team in your conference by 40. But if you can beat a team that's in the top 15 by double digits, something that no one else has been able to do this year, maybe worthy of consideration. Wouldn't be enough for me to put them in the playoff, but you didn't ask.
I don't think I think they need a considerable amount of help to make the playoff, and maybe it happens this week, maybe it happens in SEC Championship week, but from their perspective, you know, they need to come out and look very sharp against Auburn. And obviously they need to win, and it would really, really help them out if they could win by double digits. And
tell me a game you're impressed by on their resume.
There's not one.
I mean, the opportunity, and they know this. I think it's part of the reason why Nick Saban said, this is the best team we're playing all year. It's not true. That's LSU.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do – like, if your argument is – our only loss, say they win this game. If your best argument is we lost a close game,
yeah,
and then beat the fifth best team in our conference, it's not the best. It's all you've got, but it's not the best.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And they don't have a conference championship. They don't even have a division championship to hang their hat on. We did see them sneak in, but when they snuck in a couple years ago, they were the only one-loss team, I think.
And,
it was
and it
them
should
or
be,
two-loss conference champ, if I'm not mistaken.
And it should be noted that just the circumstances around the seasons are totally different. You know, so I don't think it's as likely to happen this year, whether that is because the circumstances are different or there's some Alabama fatigue and the playoff committee is just not impressed. I don't know. I think it's probably a combination of those things. You mentioned this a moment ago. If you're just joining us, Auburn looks to be getting healthier as Mike Horton and J.J. Wilson are both practicing this week and expected to be available. 321-1390, thanks for the call, Reed. Good to hear from you. Gus Malzahn wrapping up at the podium today, talking about the Crimson Tide and what Alabama will do to challenge the Tigers. We'll get to our final break now. Would love to hear from you here on the lunch break. Michael Pappas in with me. You can hear him on the Locked On Auburn podcast with Zach Blackerby. More ESPN 106.7 straight ahead.
Listen to the lunch break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Some clarity coming down the stretch if you are somehow not aware, because a lot of you listening follow the football team very closely. Derrick Brown, Marlon Davidson have had themselves quite a year in the awards category. Malzahn spent part of his press conference talking about why Derrick Brown deserved to be a part of the Heisman Trophy consideration. I think a great point a lot of Auburn fans will certainly echo and agree with. However, there's a different award that Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown have been duking it out for. And you and our friend Justin Ferguson at JFergusonAU have more information on this.
Yeah, Justin tweeted and said that Derrick Brown said Marlon Davidson quickly made sure to tell him that he pulled ahead of Brown in the SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week race. Davidson said he would concede the race to Brown if Brown won one after the Iron Bowl. And Brown said, oh, I'm definitely in contention.
I love that. Yeah, I think the tiebreaker has to go to the guy who has the best game and the biggest game, right? That seems
right.
Fair.
Yep.
All right, I like the way Marlon's thinking. Let's take a moment, take a break here from football. In case you're familiar at all, it's been a tumultuous year or two for Papa John's. Fascinating interview here. Take a listen.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days.
Same.
Livy currently and Mark Shapiro should be in jail.
Whoa.
He has no pizza experience.
Me neither.
He's never been in the pizza category. I would just say, stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's not straight?
Stay tuned.
Michael, do you feel like the reckoning is coming? Papa John's reckoning.
That little giggle there at the end.
Dangerous.
I'm a little nervous.
Dangerous.
I'm a little nervous.
40 pizzas, 30 days. He's really doing some quality control from a distance.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. Like, that's way too many pizzas.
I don't know, man. Is he like the guy that just checks in with the old gal friend and says, I hope you're well? That's it? Just, I hope you're well?
He does not hope they're well.
I don't think he hopes they're well.
Not at all. This whole situation is fascinating. I don't know. I don't even know what to think.
Like, it's amazing.
And what is going to happen? What
reckoning is Papa John's bringing to the mainstream culture here? Because pizza is a part of our mainstream culture.
What is the day of reckoning?
I prefer Domino's, but.
Whoa.
The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's not straight?
Stay tuned.
Whoa.
That giggle, man. That giggle. I can't handle the giggle. Something eerie is coming. He sounds like a villain in a bad movie with that giggle. I want to know what he's got planned. I want to know the whole story.
Let's go to Shane first, and then we will get to Alan. Shane, what's up, dude?
Hey, guys. Papa John pizza sucks.
Jeez.
Have you guys had it? It's not good.
Well, I'm a Domino's guy, but...
I'm a Domino's, or actually Marco's has a good pizza, man.
All right. But no, you're not buying the reckoning and that odd chuckle at the end that is slightly terrifying, Shane.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening right there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm equally lost for words. Do we want to talk any football, or did you just have to get in the point that this is one of the weirder
just
things?
I wanted to get in the point about Papa John's really sucked. But if we win the game, do you guys – you guys aren't from Auburn, are you?
I am. Like Michael's from Texas, where they've got a fiddle in the band. Yes, I grew up here, graduated from high school about 10 years ago.
Awesome. So, all right, I did as well. So I'm curious. This is more. Is Auburn? If you grew up with sports, I don't know if you did or not, but is it more to you than just a game? Like even if we win this game, are you satisfied with the season, or is it still sting that these other teams are slightly ahead of us each year? Like, we're just right out of reach each year. It just seems like we're one game off every year.
I guess I'd start, Shane, by saying, and a good point there, that the check will clear either way for us because we're covering it. But if I'm an Auburn fan, Shane, if Auburn is 9-3 with losses to a bunch of top 10 teams, two of which came on the road with a freshman quarterback, I think you have to be pleased with that. If you've got a win over Oregon and a win over your biggest rivalry, it doesn't mean that you can't still be disappointed. But an opportunity to get to double-digit wins, something Auburn has not always been able to do, certainly with consistency, and a win against a top-five team that has not missed the playoff yet, it's hard to just consider it a failure.
Definitely makes it sting less. Definitely makes it sting less.
Yeah, it does make it sting less. It's just, I wonder what, you know, so I kind of can think we can relate to LSU a little bit because, you know, they have the talent every year,
right?
And they're off just by like a gang or so every single year.
Basically Alabama, right?
Basically Alabama, yeah. I wonder how they feel, you know, on an every other year basis. You know, not this year because you know how they're doing right now, but
sure.
They have had a quarterback, and that was all that they were missing is that one piece, and they found it. And look at their success.
Right. A good point, Shane, you know, because even in 11, they win that crazy game, that I guess 9-6 game, and then they beat Georgia in the SEC championship and then lose to Alabama in the actual championship. So I can only imagine how frustrating it was to have that insane amount of athleticism to watch those players go on and flourish in the NFL and realize that you were really just a capable quarterback away. Shane, really appreciate the call. We've got to get to Alan. More good points, though, there from Shane. Alan, your turn.
Okay, first of all, there's no such thing as bad pizza.
okay.
Now, onto the game. Okay. You were talking about the committee a second ago.
Sure.
If the committee might be swayed by something as kind of nebulous as Bama fatigue, couldn't they be just as swayed by the possibility that of a rematch of the game of the century and all the hype, the amount of column written on an Alabama LSU rematch, wherever it may be, semifinal, final, and the money that it'll come out of that. I mean, couldn't they be just easily swayed by that prospect?
I think worthy of consideration, because as much as fans like to complain about rematches, generally from a rating standpoint, we actually really like them. We like the dynasty. We like the rise and the fall. People have complained about that Alabama-Clemson matchup for a couple of years now, but people also really tuned in to that game.
Yeah.
I see your line of logic and would agree to some extent that, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for as good of a game as that was. I don't think it's the determining factor. I don't think that's how the playoff committee will operate. But I do follow you, Alan.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Certainly appreciate that. Why don't we slide into Michael quickly? What's on tonight? Thanks, Shane and Alan.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
We got a lot on tonight. We'll start with college basketball. 1:30 p.m. 1:30 p.m. on ESPN2. In about half an hour, Georgia is playing Michigan State. Both teams lost yesterday. Georgia no longer undefeated. 6:30 p.m. on ESPN2, Auburn takes on Richmond. 9:30 p.m. on ESPN, Kansas and BYU. 10:30 p.m. on ESPN2, Colorado and Clemson. 5 p.m. on CBS, Wichita State, South Carolina. And 6 p.m. on ESPN News, Oklahoma plays Missouri. In college football, we got some action tonight. 5 p.m. on ESPN Plus, Ohio is playing Akron. At 6 p.m. on ESPNU, Western Michigan is playing Northern Illinois.
Dude, you're rolling right now. I love it. I love the tempo. We are cutting through the cheese.
In the NBA, at 7:30 p.m. on NBA TV, the Clippers are traveling to Dallas to take on the Mavs and the best player of all time, Luka Doncic. At 7 p.m. on NBC Sportsnet, the Stars are traveling to Chicago to take on the Blackhawks. Movie pick tonight, 6 p.m. on AMC, is Elf getting the Christmas spirit.
You said classic. I said, is this at the point where it could be a cult classic? You said no, Painter. It's simply a classic.
It is a classic. At the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick, 8:45 p.m. on HBO Comedy, The A-Team. And finally, at 10 p.m. on HGTV, House Hunters International is in Rincon, Puerto Rico.
Ooh, hit me with that rolling R that you did earlier.
Puerto Rico.
Ooh, okay, I see you. You're from Texas. Shout out to Dan Peck. He got to call a game at Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Yeah.
Very neat, very cool, very legal, very cool. We're about out of time here, dude.
Thanks for having me, Penner. I've had a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it as always. Enjoyed hearing from Charlie Potter, David Housel, a little bit from Gus Malzahn as he stepped to the podium about 12:15 today. Michael, you're on the Locked On Auburn podcast. Where can people follow you?
Follow me on Twitter at CouchPapTato, and shout out to Jeremy Johnson.
Yeah, enjoy Jeremy with the surprise visit. He's in town. Good to catch up with him. Just a good dude. And also enjoy hearing his takes. Helping helping Auburn win in any way he can, even when he's a Cincinnati Bearcat. That's going to do it for us today. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. Of course, The Drive with Bill Cameron, as they are every day, 4 to 6. We've enjoyed it here live from the Key of Auburn studio. We will try to be better tomorrow. Justin Ferguson will be back. And we should have a couple of guests for you lined up. The Machine, folks. Greg Peterson will join us. We will have all that action to recap. Auburn Hoops. They're on a roll. They play Richmond tonight. We'll be talking about it here. Until then, have a terrific Tuesday and keep it toasty.